It's time for Rebel Extra. This is your team, Las Vegas, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 364-1100. That's 364-1100. Now, live from the Finley Toyota Studios, it's Bernie Fratto and John Von Tobel.
Well, 378 days ago, the UNLV Runnin' Rebels took out the nationally ranked Oregon Ducks at the MGM Grand Arena in what turned out to be the last signature win for our home team, Rebels. Since then, well, the Ducks, they became the Pac-12 champs, and both programs have headed in decidedly different directions. So when the Scarlet and Gray invaded Portland tonight to take on Dana Altman's number 22-ranked Ducks, the question was simple. Could this young team battle, fight, and compete on the road against a nationally ranked opponent? And after starting the season 2-2, Oregon had won seven straight wins before tonight. Well, it turned out to be a game of two very different halves. In spite of some odd, troubling first half stats for UNLV, and the stats don't always tell the whole story, so the Rebels only trailed it by four at the intermission, 37-33. But a miserable first 10 minutes of the second half and a much different tone was set for the remainder of the game as Oregon exploded somewhat and exacted revenge for last year's loss by a final score of 83-63. Welcome back to another edition of Rebel Extra, the post-game show devoted to you, the fans and supporters of UNLV Runnin' Rebel basketball. Rebel Extra is brought to you by our proud sponsors, Angel Park Legacy in Durango Hills, OB Sports' most complete golf course experiences in Las Vegas. Diamondback Land Surveying, from brick walls to the Taj Mahal. Diamondback Land Surveying are your land surveying experts. 8-Ball Bail Bonds, if you had more fun at the game than the law allows, call 8-Ball Bail Bonds to get you out of jail. And Pizza My Dear, with a smoke and lunch deal, a 12-inch pizza for only $5 with two locations to serve you. Go to pizzamydear.com. Now, we come to you after every game this season. We want to hear from you, Las Vegas. Call us tonight at 364-1100. And be a part of the action. This is your team. Your opinion counts. We want to hear from you. Before I go any further, let me introduce tonight's broadcast team. To my left, turning all the dials and keeping us glued together, is producer extraordinaire Bobby Machado. He'll also be taking your calls at 364-1100. And to my right, I'm joined by the gentleman. You hear him Sunday mornings hosting his own show, Out of Line, on our sister station, 920 AM. That would be Brian Feldman. Brian, I will tell you this. I've been on a lot of roller coasters in my life, from Cedar Point to Six Flags. I don't know if I've seen a roller coaster like this. This is a team that's won by 39 and 28. They've lost by 20, 24, and 49. Who is this team, Brian?
You know, Bernie, it's the holiday season. And I guess to put it, if you want to put a tag on this team, let's call them the Island of Misfit Toys. This is a team that Santa Claus found and brought us, and Santa Claus would be Marvin Menzies, and we have a team in Las Vegas. But wow, Bernie, roller coaster would be a great way to put it.
Seemed like the Rebels might have caught somewhat of a break. Chris Boucher out tonight, Oregon's 6'10" shot blocker. Oregon leads the nation in block shots. He was coming off a game, 23 points and 19 rebounds. And, you know, the first half, the Rebels only trailed by four, but sometimes the stats don't always tell the story. It was odd, because Oregon had turned the ball over a ton and committed a lot of fouls, but the Rebels, they still only shot 26% from the first half and were out-rebounded significantly. But, Brian, it was the first 10 minutes of the second half that were so miserable. I don't know what Dana Altman said to his team at halftime, but these were two different teams in the second half.
You know what he said to his team at halftime, Bernie? He went in there and said, "We are getting beaten by a team of has-beens." And I don't mean it in a negative way, but again, this is Dana Altman. This is the 22nd-ranked Oregon Ducks. And UNLV just got beat by Duke by 49 points a week prior. So he's like, we're winning by 4 points to UNLV. And he got them motivated. They came out fired up. And UNLV became what we thought they were and what they have been all season in the second half.
They're 6-5. They do show some flashes, as we've talked about. They do show some stretches. Did the Rebels fight tough tonight for a lot of the game? Yes, they did. Did they outwork the Ducks in the first half? I think they did. Were they scrappy at times? Yes. Could they have done a better job keeping their hands up in their zone defense? Yes. Were they overmatched by a much better team? Yes. But the first half, I will tell you, I thought the Rebels did a lot of good things. but it's a 40-minute basketball game. And here's the kicker. This is what I call the 12 days of Christmas. The Rebels are playing five games in 12 days. They've played three, all right? You've got a quick turnaround, Southern Illinois, Monday night, 7 o'clock at the Thomas and Mack. And then 3 days after that, you get the team that beat Duke, Kansas, for the final home conference game, the final conference game, as it were, before you head into conference play and to go to Colorado State. I don't know. Do you start to pay attention towards things of this nature? Here's what I mean by this. Boise State also went to Oregon, played Oregon with Chris Boucher, lost by five. We're going to get Boise State within our first five conference games. Marvin Menzies' old team, New Mexico State, they beat Arizona State tonight, a team that UNLV lost to by 24. I don't know how transitive property works. I don't know what happens when you compare things like that, but I start to pay attention to things like this so you can somewhat speculate. People always ask me, how many games do you think this team will win this year? This is what I do know. The teams the Rebels have beaten, UC Riverside, Cal State Fullerton, Northern Arizona, Southern Utah, and on down the line, I don't think any of those teams would finish in the top eight in the Mountain West Conference. The teams the Rebels have lost to, TCU, off to a great start under Jamie Dixon, Duke, Arizona State, Oregon tonight, South Alabama. I didn't expect the Rebels would beat those teams. I was hoping we'd compete better. But Monday night against Southern Illinois, to me, this game is more of a defining game than any of they've played all year. They're part of the Missouri Valley Conference Challenge. Southern Illinois, a quality team, 22 wins last year, three starters back. We get them on our home floor. As a matter of fact, I'd like to hear from the folks, 364-1100. What do you expect to happen in that game? Because that's a team that I think would finish in the upper half of the Mountain West Conference, if not challenge for a Mountain West Conference title. They're not Duke. They're not Oregon. They're not Arizona State. They're not Kansas. But they're also not UC Riverside, with all due respect to UC Riverside. But you know where I'm going with that. They're not Southern Utah, Northern Arizona, a team the Rebels beat by 39. This variance of scores, it's what's throwing me.
Bernie, it's going to be a real tough game on Monday night. And don't think you see Southern Illinois and you think, okay, this is a good rebound game, pardon the pun, after playing Oregon and what happened tonight. It's not. It's less than a 48-hour turnaround before they have to get on the floor again. Granted, they are back here at the Thomas and Mack, but this team is not, as you mentioned, 22 wins last year. They have three returning starters. This is going to be a hell of a matchup for UNLV. And Bernie, I don't want to be a naysayer. I'd like to hear from everyone what they think is going to happen out there. But I'll tell you right now, don't think that this is an easy game and don't get down on them for losing if it happens. Because, Bernie, I don't see how they win this game simply because, like you said, this would be
the situational scheduling
upper echelon team in the Mountain West that they could be. They would have that ability to win, maybe finish in the middle of the pack. UNLV, are they going to win? You talked about it before we got on the air. Are they going to win a home game? I mean, a road game this year?
It's going to be tough. The Mountain West has some very tough venues to not only travel to when you consider Air Force or Colorado Springs or Wyoming. It's cold, difficult places to get to. And then it's very tough to win at San Diego State, at Utah State, at Taco Bell Arena in Boise. I think Nevada's got one of their best clubs in years. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. One of the things I wanted to talk about tonight, let's get to a couple of positives. Okay, sure. First, we're going to have Mark Anderson on here after our first break at the top of the hour. A couple of things I want to know. We know that Dwayne Morgan wasn't able to play tonight, obviously nursing the shoulder, and now the hip's bothering him again. And Chris Jones is nicked up as well, tweaked his left, well, his opposite foot, the one that was in the boot. Add those two together, we're missing 14 rebounds. How do you replace that? You don't replace that. The Rebels were out-rebounded tonight, 40-28, although I did think they fought. A real positive, Chuck Nembele really impressed me. He fights for every rebound. He's getting better. He's gaining valuable experience. Tough kid who played very, very hard, had a sensational block on Sorkin early in the game, and then stares him down, right? I don't know if that was smart, but I liked his physical attitude early. He's just young, and I liked what I saw to him. Tyrell Green, super first half. Hit that NBA bomb to end the first half, to create somewhat of a false sense of security, 37-33. But he had 15 points and 5 rebounds in the first half. Struggled in the second half, but a great first half. Two outstanding efforts by those two gentlemen. Now, Javon Mooring had 20 points and 4 more three-pointers, but I have an issue because it's somewhat misleading. A lot of those shots were wild, crazy shots. And the Rebels were already down by 21, 23, 24, so they were somewhat inconsequential. can he play within himself when it matters if the game comes down to the wire? Now, he's a fabulous free throw shooter. One, by the way, another positive tonight. Rebels 19-21 from the charity stripe. Hey, save that for when you're at Boise and you need to make a couple of free throws to seal a win, you know, in mid-January.
Bernie, when it sum it all up, I mean, real simply, the biggest issue that I saw tonight and I've seen all season long is a floor general is missing from this team. We can talk about it over and over again, and I know you want to stick to positives, and I do too, because I believe in Marvin Menzies.
No, I want to maintain our objectivity. Go ahead.
No, yeah, I believe in Marvin Menzies and his yes. philosophy, and he needs the time to develop this team. But you've got to find somebody that can play that position. You
a
mentioned before,
yep.
Larry Bush, give him a shot. He looked decent against Duke. I mean, he actually gave us a few quality minutes against Duke at that position. Mooring's not getting it done. Poyser, God bless him, he's trying as hard as he can out there, but he's not a one. He's a two or a three. I mean, the guy cannot play that position. And that is the biggest problem with this team. You can't win at this level without good point guard play. It's just that simple.
And Dana Altman knew we struggle at that position. And as such, he threw a lot of defensive looks at us. There was plenty of full-court pressure, three-quarter pressure traps, 2-3 zone, man defense, you name it. We saw it, and the pressure really bothered UNLV. And it was, you know, it helped set up Oregon's offense. And there were a lot of runouts due to turnovers. I mean, I don't know what happened. The Rebels only turned the ball over, four or five times in the first half. It was outstanding. And then six times in the first 5 minutes of the second half, back to traveling, back to, you know, throwing errant passes into traffic. Oregon had active hands. Oregon came out with a whole different energy in the second half. But without a true floor general, as you like to say, on the floor, the Rebels struggled mightily to get into any semblance of an offense. Many times, their first two or three passes would be above the free throw line. When that happens, your offense is in trouble.
No question about it. And their offense is simply throwing up bombs. In the second half, as soon as they start getting down by double digits, they simply play from the perimeter. There's no way this is going to be a key for success. And it's killing them. It is literally killing them. This run-and-gun play of theirs, they're not a team capable of doing this, Bernie. They've got to develop an inside game of some sort. And again, it's going to start from a guard that is going to help them penetrate. And they just don't have it. And yet everybody penetrates against UNLV. A problem, a big problem, is you've got to be able to defend inside. You've got to be able to close the lane. That lane opens up all the time for opposing teams, Bernie, and it's been a real problem.
Oregon came out, scored the first 7 points of the first of the game, pushing the ball. The Rebels did a poor job of stopping the ball and getting into the running lanes. They were late to get back on defense after missed shots. They were late to get back on defense after made shots. But the second half, things really got crazy. Oregon outscored the Rebels 21-5 in the first 10 minutes. Rebels only 3 points in the first 9 minutes, and a lot of it as a result of the inability to get into an offensive flow. This is a caller show. We want to hear from you, Las Vegas. Rebels fall tonight at Oregon, 83-63. He's Brian Feldman. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're going to take your calls for the rest of the evening. We want to hear from you. So let's get it started. Let's go out to the phone lines. We're joined by Kevin. Kevin, thanks for checking in tonight on Rebel Extra.
Guys, how about a little trivia here for both of you? Who's the most famous basketball player to play at Southern Illinois ever?
You know what? Walt Frazier. Clyde Frazier.
There you go.
Do I wouldn't like to pick up a peach on my birthday or anything?
That's a good job.
I knew you'd get it, Bernie. You guys still there?
I'm here. It's Walt Clyde Frazier.
Yep. So my only thoughts are, I think the best thing the Rebels can do this year, if you're Coach Menzies, is just keep the team together. Who knows what can happen? Keep everybody on board, and then you get to the Mountain West tournament. Maybe you steal a game or two. And if you do that, maybe by then people say, hey, that's not a bad season. I mean, just to keep it together. I mean, there's going to be some ugly losses on the road. There might be games where they score between 35 and 45 points.
Kevin, let me ask you a question. To me, the most defining game to the season at this point is going to be Monday against Southern Illinois. Do you expect the Rebels to win Monday night?
Let's see.
Did I say Sunday? I meant Monday. Thanks, buddy.
I mean, are we allowed to talk about this stuff? I mean, Southern Illinois is probably going to be favored by 4 or something, 5, or no?
Oh, I don't think the Rebels are going to be a home dog to Southern Illinois.
No, I don't either. Pick them.
Okay. No, I don't think that'll happen. By the way, Southern Illinois lost to Sam Houston State the other night. Look, they're a quality team. They're a Missouri Valley Conference team. I've already said it many times. They won 22 games last year, got three starters back. Here's the thing, Kevin. They're not Duke, Kansas, Oregon, TCU, a team of that ilk from a Power 5 conference. But they're also not UC Riverside, Cal State Fullerton, Southern Utah, Northern Arizona. They're a team that's in our orbit, as it were. And we've got them on our home floor. Well, not we. I'm not on the team. The Rebels got them on their home floor. So this is a game that's defining. If the Rebels hold home serve against this team, then they assure themselves a winning record going into conference play. But if they don't, it becomes more of a defining moment. What are your thoughts?
Well, can you guys help me out? I mean, how would they compare rating-wise or ranking? Because South Alabama came here and got them pretty good. You know, South Alabama, similar, you know, RPI.
I think the Rebels have improved a lot since South Alabama, even though I would argue that Coach Menzies is still very much searching for chemistry and combinations and rotations that can be productive and consistently productive over longer stretches. So, but I do think the Rebels are much better now than they were November, you know, the team you saw November 11th against South Alabama.
All right, well, I mean, they're basketball coaches. He's got a staff and himself, so they'll figure it out.
All right, before I let you run, do you want to make a prediction on Monday night? To me, that's a defining game.
Yes. 60-58 UNLV wins.
I like it.
Okay, fair enough. Just check back with us Monday night, Kevin, because I turn it right around. It's the 12 days of Christmas, Brian. 5 games in 12 days. We've got 3 under our belt, 2 to go.
Well, I like what Kevin said as far as, you know, he hopes that Menzies can keep them together. Bernie, I don't think it's going to be a problem of keeping these guys together. A lot of them are excited to be playing at this level. I mean, realistically, if you talk about UNLV quality talent, there's only a couple of guys on the team that would fit that mold to start this season. So Menzies is definitely going to keep them together. And the one thing is, you got to all remember this, and I know we know, Menzies didn't make this schedule. It was made, and you've said this, we sound like a broken record, it was made with the idea that Dave Rice's team
Brian,
would be
I want
playing
a schedule like this. You think you're lucky stars. You get to play against Duke, Kansas, and Oregon, and you learn about yourselves. And by the way, you mentioned Troy Baxter off the air. I couldn't agree more. That kid really showed some real snippets of flashy offensive prowess tonight. He got 4 fouls, but he's an athletic player. He's quite a find by Coach Menzies. Let's go back out to the phone lines. We're joined by Fernando. Fernando, how are you? Thanks for checking into Rebel Extra tonight.
I'm doing okay, guys. Hey, I know this team is young. We're a team, a program in progress right now. In about maybe next year, 2 years, we'll be okay. But I would hope one of our local stations would televise a home game, these non-conference games, and to give this team exposure. And I think that's what they need.
I'm with you. I wish the TV schedule has been quite light this year, Fernando. I certainly agree with that, evidenced by Monday night's game against Southern Illinois. It'll be on the Mountain West Network, but it won't be any network TV. I'm with you.
Yeah, okay. Hey, guys, have a good holiday.
All right, thanks for checking in. We're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we're going to catch up with Mark Anderson, the beat writer of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He was in Portland tonight witnessing the game, a loss to number 22-ranked Oregon Ducks by 83-63. I have some questions about the health of the team, among other things, and I'll look ahead to Southern Illinois and the state of Coach Menzies and his thoughts. So stick with us, folks. We've got much more show for you to go. We come back on the other side. We'll be joined by Mark Anderson of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. You're listening to Rebel Extra.
Text the show by sending ESPN to 69187 or give us a call at 364-1100. This is Rebel Extra.
Back on Rebel Extra, ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. Bernie Fratto, Brian Feldman. Tonight, Bobby Machado producing. Give us a call, 364-1100, or text us at 69187. Join in the action. Preface your text with ESPN. Rebels fall tonight, 83-63 to number 22-ranked Oregon. And at this time, we're joined by a gentleman who was at the game. He's at all games. He's the beat writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. That would be one Mark Anderson. Mark, how are you?
Doing well, Bernie. How you doing?
Good. Before I get too much into tonight's game, what's on my mind more than anything is the health of Dwayne Morgan and Chris Jones. Will either or both play Monday against Southern Illinois?
Neither will play. I confirmed that with Marvin. I can't speak for the about the Kansas game, but I know they will not play Monday night.
The reason I ask, Mark, is I believe Southern Illinois is perhaps the most defining game of the year. They're not Duke, Kansas, TCU, or Oregon, but they're also not UC Riverside, Cal State, Fullerton, Northern Arizona, or Southern Utah. They're in our ilk. They're in our orbit, as it were, a 22-win team from the Missouri Valley Conference. How much gas will the Rebels have in the tank when they tip off Monday night? What did you see tonight?
It's going to be interesting to say because Southern Illinois had about a week to prepare. And, the coaches will finally get a look at Southern Illinois tonight on the flight home. And then they'll convey that to the players tomorrow. That's a pretty quick turnaround. That's a big advantage for Southern Illinois. In some ways it could be good. You don't get the paralysis by analysis, but at the same time, you want to know what you're preparing for. My guess is because of such a quick turnaround that the Menzies will try to kind of simplify the game plan so you're not trying to fill their heads with too much in such short notice. But I think it's a big challenge for them, though.
Yeah, I think it's a bigger challenge than most people are thinking out there. Hey, Mark, Brian Feldman here. Real quick, I wanted to ask you, obviously one of the biggest issues with this UNLV team all year is the play of the point guard. What is going on with the point guard situation? I don't see anything changing. Jalen Poizer is definitely a deer in headlights out there. I mean, we saw Larry Bush played. I mean, he gave us a couple of decent minutes against Duke. I saw him in there for a second, but does Marvin Menzies have any idea what he's going to do with that position?
Yeah, I don't know that there's much you can do this season. I just sort of think it is what it is. I hate to use that cliche, but I think that's the deal. That they don't have a true point guard, and there's really not a whole lot they can do about it at this point. I mean, they can try to improve here and there, and there are games where Poizer looks pretty decent, but he's obviously a two guard. I mean,
right.
If he can play him a two guard full time, he'd be really good. But the point guard they have sitting on the bench, he's redshirting or he's sitting out because of in some way transfer rules. Jordan Johnson from Wisconsin Milwaukee. So that's the guy they need, but they can't play him this season. So. I just think there's they'll do the best they can with the situation, but it's they're never going to solve the problem this season.
Mark, let me try to rephrase it or reframe it with the cards we're dealt. I like Jalen Poizer. Okay. I think he's going to be a very serviceable scorer all year. Some have to be better than others. He's not a point guard, so I don't want to fault the young man because he's been asked to play at a position. He's doing the best he can. He has trouble guarding smaller, quicker guards, but he's one of the guys that's in the mix. Javon Mooring is a very aggressive, assertive player. That's why he led the JC World in scoring or something last year. He's just not going to miss a chance to score. He takes a lot of wild shots. I thought his numbers were very misleading tonight, 20 points. I saw something midway through the first half, which led me to believe this could be a long night because he got on the floor with the Rebels trailing 23-14, and he missed both free throws, which is rare for him because he's an excellent free throw shooter. But then he came up with a steal after missing the free throws, dribbled into traffic, and lost the ball. And I said, here we go again. You need to make better decisions. Larry Bush checks in with 2:29 to go, drives the lane like he's going to throw up a little runner and makes a beautiful outlet pass. And I said to myself, this kid drives and kicks better than the other two. I'm not at practice. I don't know what's happening, but every time I see Larry Bush, he makes me curious. What am I missing?
I don't know. And, we don't get to watch much of practices because most of them are closed. So I can't give you the insight of what's going on in practice. Like you, I can only see what I see on the floor. What I like about Larry Bush is he's an older guy. Corey and Warren actually both juniors, so I shouldn't say it's not like Warren's a youngster.
Right, right.
But he's a walk-on. I guess he's walk-on for a reason. you know, there must be something. Maybe he doesn't hold up defensively like they'd like. I don't know what it is, but you know, after the Duke game, when Marvin was asked about playing Larry Bush, he made it clear that he's third on the depth chart. He didn't say it in those words, but he certainly left that impression that this guy is third on the depth chart and he will get in if the first two guys are struggling. So, you know, I don't know what it is exactly, and it may just be that he knows that next season he's going to need Poizer Mooring for sure, and maybe he doesn't see Bush as part of the long-term plan. I don't know. I'm just guessing. I really don't know.
You know, Mark, Bernie asked me something to kick off the show tonight, and I want to pose that question to you as well. Right now, at this point, you see these guys as much as anybody, and you get to go to the limited open practices that Menzies does have. What would you say this team is? Who are they right now?
Identity-wise.
Well, that's a really good question.
And maybe we don't know yet.
I think that's it. I think that, you know, I said this before, that I don't think this is going to be a team where you can count on one guy sort of leading them throughout the season. And I think from game to game, it's going to be different guys stepping up. You know, some obviously more consistent than others, but it's, you know, Poizer's basically disappeared the past two games. And before that, he was clearly the standout, at least the standout scorer, if nothing else.
Right.
I think that it's part of the problem, and Marvin Menzies talked about it again tonight, and he's been talking about it on a regular basis, that these guys aren't executing what they're being instructed to do. And so, and those are the teams that generally don't have identities, and if a team doesn't have an identity, then that's a big problem. So, you know, I'm not sure the coaches know, frankly. And
well,
so,
the reason, and by the way, the reason I brought up Larry Bush's name is, as I observe the team, it's just I still feel coach is still searching for chemistry and combinations and rotations that can be productive over longer stretches. And so while you're in non-conference, and I didn't even mention Zion Morgan, you know, obviously I don't think he's going to get a lot of minutes this year, but this is the time of the year maybe where you do experiment. So I've beaten that to death. I'll leave that alone. Let me switch gears. A couple of positives. I thought Chuck and Dembele looked outstanding, at least early in the game. He had the block on Sorokin and the stare down. I like the way he fought for every rebound. And Tyrell Green, 15 points, 5 rebounds in the first half, included the long bomb 3 to end the half. Second half, only 3 points. What changed in the second half?
You know, they changed their defense. They started pressing more. So, it was just harder for UNLV to get into the offensive flow into the half court like they were in the first half. They were able to get Tyrell the ball. I shouldn't say they got an offensive flow in the first half, but they were enough of a flow where Tyrell got the ball in good spots. And so they weren't able to do that in the second half to get him the ball in good spots. And so he just didn't get as many opportunities as he did in the first half. We've seen this before from him, where he when the guys are other players are struggling, where he kind of takes it upon himself to step up and score. And I just think that press in the second half just kind of overwhelmed everyone.
Yes, it did,
Mark. The guy that really impresses me the most in this team and just shows real flashes. He can be explosive. I see tons of skills, and that is Troy Baxter Jr. He had a move tonight, I think with like 8:30 mark of the first half, that blew me away. A steal, took it down, and just showed great athleticism. But then it doesn't happen again for a while. What do you think this kid's potential is?
Well, we've kind of seen this from Troy all season, and you have to remember, and this is something I have to keep reminding myself, is he's a freshman, and I guess you kind of expect this from most freshmen, is that there are going to be times he shows glimpses of why he was a four-star recruit, and you think, well, this guy's going to be in a couple of years, he's going to be really something else. And then there are other times he takes bad shots or he just sort of disappears. And he took two or three long range shots tonight. It's like, what are you doing? You know, that's a little out of your range. So I just think he's I think he's going to be really good. I just think it's going to take some time. But I think in another couple of years, I mean, he's going to be one of the best players in the Mountain West.
Mark, final question before we let you run. Certainly appreciate your time tonight. Did the Rebels get tired in the second half? Because I did see in transition, after missed baskets, they certainly weren't getting back and getting their filling their lanes and hustling back on defense. And after made baskets, it was even slightly worse, as it were. And Oregon's experience and athleticism really reared its head in the second half. But I don't know if I saw a tired Rebel team. I was seeing something different in the way they move without the ball. What did your eyes tell you in person?
Yeah, they got tired. I mean, Oregon shot 61.3% second half. So they were definitely a tired team, and I do think that press got to them mentally and physically. And it was a really good move by Dana Altman to do that, and that really did change the game.
Mark, as always, appreciate your time and your insights. Safe travels back. We'll see you Monday against Southern Illinois.
Well, thanks for both of you having me on. Appreciate it.
All right. It's Mark Anderson of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. The beat writer covers the Rebels. He was there tonight in Portland. We certainly appreciate him taking the time. Let's go back out to the phone lines. We're joined by Cameron. Cameron, thanks for weighing in tonight in Rebel Extra. What are your thoughts?
Well, tough game, especially the second half, obviously. Just had a couple thoughts. And I don't want to be, you know, too negative or calling out players by any means, but I'm struggling to see what Uche brings to the team at this point. If it was up to me, I would have his guard minutes going to Zion Morgan. And I know he's been playing some of the three and at the four. You know, I'm fine to have those minutes go to Coupet or Baxter. He just, I haven't seen much all year. And at the start of the second half, he had, you know, a couple straight turnovers. I know he's a fifth-year senior, and you like to have experience.
Yes.
But if experience isn't productive, that's obviously a problem.
You know, hold that thought for just a second. You know, Uche, as you mentioned, fifth-year senior, transferred over from University of San Francisco, shot 46% from the three-point stripe last year. He hasn't been able to find his stroke this year. He's been struggling. So might it be a situation where a coach wants to stick with a veteran kid to get his stroke back? He's going to need offensive production when conference starts. If he's shot 46% before from three-point land, is it reasonable to believe that can come back? Maybe not to that level, but that can come back.
Yeah, I mean, it could. I'd like to see it. And the problem when I watch him play, his release is extremely slow. I know he got blocked on a three-pointer against Duke, and obviously they got some athletes, but you don't see that every day. So if he's got space, he can knock it down, but we don't seem to be putting him in that position
very often.
That's
correct. That's a great observation. The Rebels had big trouble with their spacing tonight, especially in the second half.
Yeah. So, you know, I understand that he's got experience, but I just, you know, for whatever reason, he's not producing. Second, Jalen Poizer, I want him to get lots of minutes. I understand that he is talented. I think the Jalen Poizer experiment at the one, at the point guard position, I just don't see how it pans out. He's done all right against some of the, you know, far inferior teams that we've played against, but whether it's Duke, Oregon, or just some of the other better teams we've played, his production goes down completely. I want JP to be a scorer. I want him to worry about putting the ball in the hoop. I don't want him to worry about running the offense or guarding the other team's point guard. I want him coming off screens, slashing, and him at the one just doesn't seem to be doing that. Last point I'll bring up, you were just talking with Mr.
Mark Anderson.
Yeah, about kind of our identity. And I brought this up a couple shows ago, and about our identity. I think the problem is, you know, when you throw together a team like this at the last minute, the players that have the most offensive talent, those get gobbled up real fast. You know, whether it's the top, you know, 50 guys that are obviously gone, or even the next tier guys that, you know, the rest of the teams take. So when you're stuck with the best of the rest, I don't see a ton of offensive talent. So I think we could have an identity on defense. And in fact, tonight, when we made that run to get within, you know, four at the half, we played some great defense. We were running that zone with the point guard kind of trailing the ball up top. Robert Smith was calling it the amoeba. I'm not savvy enough to know exactly what that is, but I think we can play good defense in stretches. However, with Tyrell Green and Jalen Poizer being two of our best offensive players, neither of them are particularly good on defense. So it's hard when your two best players on offense and guys that you need to get some points for you aren't as good on the other end. You know, I think we could make an identity there, but who's going to score the ball if we go with a lineup of, I don't know, Zion Morgan, Troy Baxter, Chekna, Clyburn? You know, someone's got to score. So it's a struggle. And then when you put together a team like this, it's going to be a struggle. But anyway, saw some good things tonight. It's, you know, we have what we have.
Right, fair enough. All right, thanks for checking in, Cameron. Well, the Rebels are going to have to focus on defense all year. Offense is fleeting. It comes and goes. The last few minutes of the first half, the Rebels 12-9, 32-23, had a couple of excellent offensive possessions. I can recall one great backdoor play to Chris Clyburn, who took a shot but was fouled, and the Rebels took advantage of an Oregon defensive overplay, and Clyburn cut to the basket. And, boy, you'd love to see more screens, more cuts, more shoulder fakes, more head fakes, more distribution of the ball. What I really want to see, though, more than anything, is just more consistency, because the Rebels have shown flashes, but it's always very short-lived. We're going to take our final break of the evening. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show, give you some numbers, and we'll look ahead to Monday night's game against Southern Illinois. So don't go away, folks. You're listening to Rebel Extra.
Now, back to Rebel Extra on ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM.
Back on Rebel Extra, ESPN 1100, 100.9 FM. Bernie Fratto, Brian Feldman, Bobby Machado producing. Rebels fall tonight 83-63 to the Oregon Ducks. Some not really pleasant statistics, Brian. The Rebels 18 of 55 from the floor for 33%, 8 of 21 from three-point land. Solid from the free throw line, 19 of 21, but turned the ball over 16 times, 12 in the second half. That proved to be fatal. Three Rebels in double figures. Tyrone Green with 18 points, 8 rebounds. Javon Mooring, 20 points, 4 three-pointers, and Chris Clyburn, 10. But you add it all up, it's a 20-point loss on the road. They lick their wounds, get some rest for what I believe will be a game Southern Illinois team on Monday night.
It'll be a tough one, Bernie, and I hope they can get out there and do it. One word of advice to all Rebel fans. You've heard it before. You're going to keep hearing it again, and it's simple. It's patience. Give this team a chance, and give, of all people, Marvin Menzies a chance. He's the right guy in the right position right now with this team. Patience. Bernie, it's been a pleasure doing the show tonight. I love doing it. I hope that the Rebels and their fans get what they're looking for, and that'll happen down the road. It's going to take a little bit of time, but again, Bernie, to quote that Dennis Green, the famous Dennis Green quote again, they are who we thought they were, and that's not a terrible thing.
Well, and we've talked about this in the past. This is a program that's, in my view, still a historic program, one of a handful to have won a national championship. The UNLV Runner Rebels are not immune to a downtime. We've talked about it before. Again, Tom Crean and the Indiana Hoosiers, 6-25 after Kelvin Sampson left unceremoniously. I was in Michigan in 2007. I'm sure you were there when the Wolverines lost to Appalachian State. Program was going off a cliff. Michigan's arrogance would not allow that to happen. They had their downtimes. Virtually every college program has. The key, I think, your point taken, let's stick with Coach Menzies. I hope he gets a long time. We need continuity. Final thoughts, Brian.
Final thoughts are the Running Rebels are going to have a tough time this year. It goes without saying. Stick with them. Stick around, just like I said before. That troubles a point guard position. It's not going to get better this year. But you know what? Like you said, embrace this tough schedule. I think it will have them battle-tested for the Mountain West. And just maybe, Bernie, they'll surprise us.
Really curious to see what happens Monday night. I'm very much looking forward to Southern Illinois, a quality team from the Missouri Valley Conference, part of the Missouri Valley Conference Challenge. And frankly speaking, some of the other Mountain West teams have had real difficulty with Missouri Valley Conference teams. The good news is the Rebels get them on our home floor at the Thomas and Mack. Let's hope the fans get out and support this team. Two games remaining until conference play starts Thursday, December 28th at Colorado State with the Larry Eustace. It seems like the future always has a way of arriving ahead of schedule. All right, folks, that's going to do it for tonight's edition of Rebel Extra. On behalf of my broadcast team, producer extraordinaire Bobby Machado and Brian Feldman, you can catch Brian tomorrow morning on our sister station, 920 AM, hosting his own show, Out of Line. You'll have on Pedro Gomez, the new manager of the Las Vegas 51s, and I believe he's got some sound from today's Las Vegas Bowl, and Donnell Pumphrey, the San Diego State Aztecs, who set a new rushing record. I'm Bernie Fratto, bidding you goodnight. Next up for the Runner Rebels, Monday night, 7 p.m., back at the Thomas and Mack, a date with the Southern Illinois Salukis. So we'll see you then. In the meantime, tonight's final score, Oregon Ducks 83, UNLV Runner Rebels 63. Good night, folks. Drive safely. Happy holidays. And yes, go Rebels.